So, welcome to this podcast. Across professional services, there are increasing demands for broader and more varied skills, for professionals to be ever more trusted advisors to their clients. In October 2019, Saïd Business School at the University of Oxford and ACCA published an article, Creating Effective Learning Ecosystems for the Future World of Professional Services. My name is Clive Webb and I'm a Senior Insights Manager here at ACCA, and I'm pleased today to be joined by my co-author, Dr. Nigel Spencer of the Business School. Nigel is a Leadership and Development Specialist and Advisor on Talent Development based at the Business School. He has created several award-winning programs over the last 15 years for global professional services firms, focusing on how coaching can be embedded into leadership programs to create behavioural change using little and often nudge-style interventions. So Nigel, welcome.
Thank you very much, Clive. Thank you.
The first area we considered in the report was the changing career pathways across professions. And I think we drew a lot of parallels across all the professions as we did that. And I think it's fair to say that we immediately looked at your experiences in the legal profession, mine from the accountancy profession. What do you think the challenges are to individuals and how should they respond to them?
And I think that's an interesting, a really interesting thought, Clive. So how are the pathways changing? I mean, I think one thing you and I discussed quite a lot was this whole thought of the pathways are becoming less linear. Mm-hmm. You know, it used to be, I think, much more one-dimensional in the sense of the way you would join, say, an associate consultant or something, or a trainee in the legal world, and then you would gradually move up on a often quite single pathway with not too many forks in the road, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I think for various reasons that I'm sure we'll come on to, the pathways have become more plural. I think there's more choice in them. And this is for a mixture of reasons, as I say, which I'm sure we'll come on to. Partly because, let's take one reason, the organisations themselves, so the firms, the professional services firms, they're reshaping. Partly that's down to client pressures and almost the market pressures, you know, all that delivering more for less. So what shape do we need to be in? What types of services do we need to offer? And all of that. But also there's the interesting balance then of the next generation themselves coming through and thinking, well, actually, what pathway do I want in my career? And so I think there's an interesting dynamic of changes in pathways that the market is creating, but also changes that almost people are looking for as they come through as well. And how does that meet in the middle, I think, is a really interesting question.
And one of the things I think is that those experiences people are looking for generate that pathway. And that pathway be maybe to the side, or
exactly.
Somebody reminded
yes.
me the other week, it may in fact be down in order to go to the side and then up. And it's about seeking opportunities for the next step in somebody's career.
I think that's absolutely right, Clive. And you know, you mentioned in the intro that I've done a lot of work with coaching and mentoring and that type of work. I think that becomes really an important role now, even more so in organisations, because there are so many choices. And if you're trying to retain the best people, guide them on their best way through the firm, you know, we could imagine it as a picture, as almost a series of stepping stones you could take. And actually, as you say, whether it's almost sideways or slightly backwards to go in a different direction, where are your interests? Oh, that's interesting. The firm's just opened a new little service area around this specialty. I'm quite interested in that. Could I explore that as like a secondment or something, or perhaps as a permanent pathway? So I think that type of discussion, I think, lends itself also to, you know, a lot of career thinking in organisations.
So this is actually people increasingly making their own decisions about their steps. I mean, there's a lot of talk about people seeking shorter term tenures in roles and the long term with one employer now being a negative rather than a positive, although I think we're seeing some shift back the other way in some of that.
Yes, yes.
How do you as a mentor or a coach, somebody advising somebody, really give guidance on that? How do you make that lattice career really work for somebody?
So I think that's interesting. I think at an organisational level, I think one demand that creates in an interesting way, if we put ourselves in the position of, say, the partner, let's call them a partner, the senior person looking after an area or a part of a firm where you've got people coming through into that firm on there from trainees or consultants upwards into your area of the firm, I think one thing it really demands of those partners is to really take a firm-first approach in acknowledging that actually I might have Sarah or David working for me for a few years, But I need to be really comfortable with the fact that they may want to go somewhere else in the business and develop their careers. And it's not going to actually help me retain them for the firm and the business as a whole if I insist on, you know, they're very useful at doing X. Can they please do the 15th version of that project doing X again? Because you will lose people. So I think there's something here in an in a management or leadership sense about being firm first in creating those pathways. Mm. I think another thing, Clive, that I've seen happen certainly in the legal sector has been quite well publicised last year or two. The whole thing of work allocation has come in a little bit more. And that's, I think, really interesting. People have experimented with work allocation managers in a quite formal way. Now, that's quite interesting and challenging because in a way for the partner, that's almost a little bit losing control of how they give the work out within their teams. But those people, if it's well structured, I think in some firms they found they could almost be career development type people sitting between the senior person who'd, say, won a bit of work from a new client and all this pool of junior people seeking experiences who, and if they'd said to the work allocation manager, do you know what, in the next year, I'd really like to get a bit of experience doing boom, boom, boom. And if they're armed with that information, it then became almost a matching exercise of how they could help the senior people give people breadth of experience across all these types of projects.
So it's a separation of that traditional dual role of manager and workforce allocator into two separate things. And if you are a senior individual trying to grow your team, you actually need to focus on growing their skill, and allow somebody else to do the mechanics of the day-to-day operations.
Yes, and I think that's an interesting thought. As they are people, now in some firms, especially I think the larger firms, that's had to be a process just in terms of to make things sensible and efficient. But for some firms where it's been more of a personal relationship between the senior person in a team and the more junior people, as I say, this whole career path change, to take us back to that, I think has led you to some interesting thoughts of how does that senior person allow, for want of a better word, allow people to explore and go and, explore around the firm? Do you have more mentoring systems, perhaps mentoring from people outside the immediate team people work in? How does that all work to make a career lattice work? How do you build the experience? And I think a question we may come on to for the L&D function in some of those organisations as well, how do you ensure that just in time people are getting some of that learning they need to perhaps explore one of those slightly off to the side type experiences they may want to seek?
So I'll come back to the L&D team in a moment,
sure,
if I may.
Yeah.
If we come back to the idea of the skills people need and this value-added driver, is one of the things that we've just said, this difference between, if I use the ACCA pressure quotients as a model, that the sort of senior leader is responsible almost for developing the interpersonal skills which equal the success of the value-added. The resource allocator is the person responsible for the technical, ethical skill and the development in that sense of the individual, because those two paths are sort of a little bit different now.
I think it's interesting because, and this is done very differently in different firms, there are very different types of, just take the legal sector, legal services providers, very different scales of businesses. Since deregulation, very different types of businesses now, types of legal service providers, more alternative firms, the traditional big law firms, etc., or the big accountancy firms and advisory firms, as we know. So technical training is done in different ways in those firms, but I think you're right. Going back to the adult education method of, it's always talked about the 70-20-10 method, where 70% of your learning should be on the job, 20% should be more the mentoring, the coaching, 10% is more the formal learning. The senior person is, if you can get people as wonderful role models of these broader skill sets that people have been talking about, then I think they're absolutely some great people for the people to learn from, because also they can learn by observing as well. So if they're in a client meeting with them, and then perhaps on the way back from the meeting there's a debrief in the taxi brief and say, how did you think that meeting went, and there can be a nice exploratory conversation there around, what I was trying to do with the client there was actually get them to think about this or da 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 da. So anyway, I think there's a nice mentoring role on the broader skill set, absolutely.
So the success of the firm, the professional services firm, really relies on the ability to embed that and to learn those stories and lessons to get that value added. And in our report, Jill talks about some of the challenges of the evolution of professional services, why we feel we're being disrupted like every other part of the world is being disrupted. And I think that's probably at the heart of this, isn't it? That the L&D, the learning approach, the leadership approach needs to adapt to reflect this. And that's true across any profession. And as professions themselves also partly integrate, lawyers work with accountants and surveyors far more multidisciplinary.
Completely. It's completely multidisciplinary. And in PwC, just to pick one firm or in one of the big four, there's probably more lawyers now than in many law firms, for example. So it's become completely interdisciplinary, multidisciplinary. I think, you know, it's one reason, you know, you have your quotients, and, you know, I came up with my term of the polytechnic professional, polytechnic in the Greek sense of many skilled, which is literally what the word means. Because I think in the future, that's exactly where it's going. We're going to, you know, as we know, knowledge has been more commoditized. So the value add for clients is, whether it's, you know, sitting above all the stuff that the AI and the big data and the systems are churning out, and actually what patterns are there? What value can you draw out for clients in your client conversations, given that this a lot of stuff can be done very accurately and very quickly, as we know?
And see everything as a learning opportunity.
Absolutely. And I think one thing, Clive, going back to the multidisciplinary thing that's very interesting, that point is identity. And who are you as a professional now? I think, you know, if you have to reinvent yourself 5-6 times in your career now, if that's the way research is showing, you know, we'll have to be much more ongoing learners, lifelong learning. And also because your firm, your business you'll be in as a professional services business will probably reshape many times. You may be working in, like on my one of the pictures I used in the white papers around the career lattice, you may go to many different departments now. So who am I when I'm in that department or then when I move on to my next role? So identity changes. And in a way, I think that's very helpful because when I've done a lot of work around partner retirement in a couple of firms, one thing that can be difficult is if someone's been embedded in an identity for 30 years to actually then think, well, how do I change that? So I think actually it's a very good thing if we're forced to be a little bit more flexible in who we think we are as we go through our careers.
I mean, we could take the conversation down age and areas like that. And it, your comment reminds me of something one of the senior partners on the mid-tier accountancy firm said to me, that his biggest challenge is not the graduate, it's the partner retiring and trying to get them out into a sustainable life afterwards.
That's right.
Let's leave that for a moment.
Yeah, sure. Big topic.
Big topic. You mentioned learning development teams, and I think the big challenge for them really is they're not the custodian anymore, they're the curator.
Yes.
And I think that's a lesson that painfully a lot still have to learn.
I think that's right. And I think the interesting challenge, when we talk about breadth of skill, breadth of career path, new roles, new skills, If you know, I was head of L&D for about 15 years in a couple of different firms. If you put yourself in the head of L&D's role and you think, crikey, the amount of skills I'm going to have to help people develop are getting broader. So how do you do that? And the only way you can do that, you know, you can't keep reinventing courses quickly enough almost, or on the L&D budgets and all of that challenge. So you have to curate and actually allow people access to outside stuff that's on offer. And again, the 70-20-10 approach. What can be done by mentoring? What should be done through a formal course? You need to think about that in a quite careful way so that you can actually make that really effective for your firm.
So one of the other things that naturally picks up on, I think, is that there is a half life of a skill, and that's rapidly decreasing. That traditionally, yeah, we learned a rule book and it was good for our lives. Now you learn a rule book and it might be good for 3.5 years or four years.
Yes.
That creates another pressure on the individual to learn a different career structure, but also on the L&D teams and business leaders.
And I think that's really interesting, though. So I know Jane Daly, who commented and helped us with our article, and Jane with her research report she's been doing for Towards Maturity, said a lot of the thoughts around we need to move to being self-determined learners. So it's not only self-directed, but actually, how do we almost help that learning? How do we help that learning muscle to keep really strong through people's careers? I think is a really, really interesting question.
Especially as our lives become more complex and the pressures
on us,
more
busy,
take different forms.
Exactly. How do we create that reflective space to actually learn as we're going along throughout our careers? And realise actually, and it was interesting, I was talking to someone who actually was a partner in a firm, but actually retired, probably a baby boomer or Gen X person. And actually, even back then, you know, we think it's a new thing now sometimes, I think. But actually, they were saying to me, they said, do you know, actually, when I look back, all the best partners were the ones that realised they needed to reinvent themselves and keep learning all the way throughout their careers. And so perhaps we're now expressing this more often or talking to firms more often about it, but I think it's been there actually a while. Yeah. But it's certainly true, that whole thing of how do we create the space for learning and actually make help people keep learning.
And that mantra that we always got rolled into us of we fail to learn, we learn to fail.
Yes.
Actually, as a learning development professional, that was one thing. But that's now really the story of everybody.
Yes.
If we don't invest in ourselves, we learn to fail effectively. We are not taking the opportunity of that lattice.
Yes. And also, I think, how do we, in the firm, if you know, we're almost the OD consultants in the firm, how do we help people to almost learn by doing and create that safe space for learning so that they can learn, fail a little bit, in inverted commas, as they go along? But actually, they're doing a lot of learning by actually giving them a bit of responsibility on a project, but put the risk management around that so that actually it works okay for the firm's brand, for example. So it's safe to learn. So I think that's a massive thing for me, especially if you're a mentor. Can I create safe places for people to learn by doing?
So to bring this all to a conclusion, I guess that's one key point we want people to remember, yes. Safe place to learn. Some other ideas and key takeaways for people?
Yeah, I think, you know, just a couple of key messages or thoughts from me. I mean, you know, we referenced earlier the ACCA's quotients, and also I'd done my list of skills you could think about as being more polytechnic or many-skilled professional. So if you're listening to this, why don't you have a look at those? They're in the article and think, you know, mark yourself out of 10 on some of the quotients and just say, you know, where's my focus been in my learning? And then perhaps create a little bit of a development plan or a few actions around that. So that would be one thought. And perhaps secondly, Clive, I think if you're more the L&D, the managing partner, the CEO, this last point we've just been talking about, what are you doing at an organisational level to give people the encouragement to devote time to learning? Is it valued? Mm. Are some of the heroes of your organisation the people who are great mentors? Do you have like an award perhaps at your partner offsite, for example, of a partner who's been a great mentor? How do you almost make learning something to be aspired to in your organisation and make it okay for people to spend time on it?
That role of the culture.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Comes back to culture.
And the other thing I think for an individual, take the time to spend that 3 minutes a day.
Completely.
Learn something new.
Completely.
Don't be afraid of that.
Be curious.
Be curious.
Be curious.
That's a good one to end on. Thank you, Nigel.
Been a pleasure. Thank you, Clive.
So, if you'd like to read the report that formed the basis of this podcast, then you can find it on either the ACCA Global website under the Learning for the Future area of Professional Insights, or alternatively on the Oxford Side Business School website. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Goodbye.